In this episode, Lilek talks about her recent trip to Plum Village. She tells us about the origins of the monastery and the community and the founder Thich Nhat Hanh. Lilek visited her spiritual home, as she puts it. When there, she joined forces with a sister nun she knows from when she first visited the village and with whom she struck up a rapport for their shared passion for music. This is where Lilek introduces me to the verb buddhify, which is definitely a new one for me. There is a light-heartedness to Lilek's account, and at the same time there is a deeper meaning, which makes it almost zen-like in itself. Lilek also takes us through how the resilient community that has been established in Plum Village makes use of meditation and counseling circles to address political pain, awareness overload, and crises traffic through globalization. We also talk about a course run by Sister True Dedication called ZASP, so listen out for that. Through these simple conversations, I have come to learn a lot about Zen Buddhism, spirituality, and also associated movements that unite nature with politics, and by which I am referring to climate activism, human rights, tolerance and acceptance. These talks with Lilek have opened gateways to deeper musings, and I am grateful to her again for her time. Tuan Mike clocking out. Enjoy.
Dong weche pek kudwelo mabiro e tuanda Mike. Dong parodit kod jok mawuoye tuanda Mike. Seche tin sud buta wawinjie tuanda Mike. Wola wachokre, wabed piny, biwawinje. Tuanda Mike. Ero chako, dumomitndi. Tuanda Mike. Podcast makende.
As you may have already read the title of this podcast, you know that I'm extremely happy to welcome Lilek back. Hi, Lilek. How are you doing?
Hi, Zach. I'm fine. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Getting better. We're coming to that period in the year where people dream of doing absolutely nothing and instead get stressed by doing absolutely everything. But that's just the way that it goes, I guess. You, however, have had a very interesting recent event experience, life period. I'm not sure what would be the best way to talk about it, but that's why you're here to talk about it. So do you want to tell us where you were? Because obviously I will forget the correct name.
You mean you will say I was in Plum Valley? Yeah. I was in Plum Village.
Plum which Village.
Is a monastery, and yeah, Plum Village, which is a monastery in southwest France near Bordeaux. It was founded by a Vietnamese monk who was exiled there. And so it had its 40th anniversary last year, I think. Wow. And it's a community, and it's a monastery where monks and nuns live and also lay people. And I go there often, so it's like visiting my family, but like in a positive way. I mean, it's coming back home. It's my spiritual home. So I made space for that, and I went there for 1 month in the so-called Rains Retreat, which is a retreat that's taking place in the winter for 3 months. And it's a special period where people come together, they stay within certain boundaries, and they try to intensify that practice.
And the name of the individual who established the monastery is
Thich Nhat Hanh, fantastic. Also called Thay. So he's quite well known for his books and talks, and he died 2.5 years ago at the age of 94. So he was very old, and his legacy lives on. The community is still vibrant and active, and that's very beautiful to see.
I'm always impressed whenever I read quotations from random sources. And I think to myself, my word, that is such a beautiful thought. And at the end, it's signed Thich Nhat Hanh. And you are the first person to have told me about that name. If I had read this name anywhere else, I don't know. But ever since you told me about it, and you told me how to spell it correctly, which I will not do now live,
after that, I started to see him in many places, and his teachings, and obviously you met him on numerous occasions. Yeah, do you want to talk about just quickly what kind of a character he was? Because I don't think many people would know.
Well, character, I would say what you've just said reflects his nature. He was a poet. He wrote poetry. And so his teaching was not only intelligent and deep, but also poetic. Some people even have problems with that because they think it's like, I don't know, it's not serious, because it's beautiful words, but it's very deep. So, and he comes from a Zen tradition, Zen is simple, but not easy, and it's very deep. So don't underestimate these simple words, because they hold a lot of wisdom. And he was also a peace activist. He had to go through Vietnam War. He was active as a social worker, as a monk, but also he founded the school for youth, social youth and service. I have to look it up to spell it correctly. But they went out to the villages to build them up, to bring food to the people. And he was also involved in the Paris peace talks around the Vietnam War. And so he was very experienced in times of war, and his spiritual practice also was, let's say, informed by that. Not nourished in a way, but, you know, not in that sense. And so he was a man who had gone through traumatic experiences without being traumatized, protected by his very, very strong practice. So he's a big example for me and an inspiration. I just can't say it in a different way. It's true.
Yeah, and completely unprepared, if I may say. I did not warn you beforehand that I was going to ask you for a little introduction to this great person, but you did so, and words came straight from the heart. So therefore, to be definitely appreciated. But this time you were there, you didn't quite have everything the way that maybe you wanted to have it. You were a bit busier than maybe you planned. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I have a nun friend who I make music with, which is very beautiful. I hadn't planned that, neither when I went there 7 years ago to live there, but we came together and it just clicked. And so we have been making music together ever since. And with music, I mean, like Stevie Wonder, Norah Jones, and all the like R&B classics and other songs, when we always Buddhify them. And so this time she said beforehand, hey, some nuns, they asked me if I could teach them more about singing and how to care for the voice. And would you be happy to do that? And I was like, but I don't know if I have so much to share. I mean, I'm very experienced as a singer, but I'm not a singing teacher. So I said, yeah, okay, I can talk about it maybe like one time or so. And then I ended up giving singing lessons 3 times a week, plus rehearsals, plus one concert a week, which was amazing. And being in Plum Village always is a practice for accepting what is happening, like following the stream, and also letting go of ideas. So I was busier than usual, and it kind of marked my experience, but it was also very beautiful to be able to find out that I have so much to share in this field, in this field of teaching, and how much the voice is connected with the spiritual practice and the path, if you want, because singing is a very intimate thing. I mean, also using your voice, and also not only just saying something, but what you say, how you say it, and the voice itself is an instrument that you can use. And if you listen to famous people, they always have voice training in a positive or in a negative way. I mean, if you listen to Hitler, you know that this is a very characteristic way of speaking. If you listen to Obama, and like politicians or other people, they usually use their voice in a special way to make the most impact. And in this case, being in a monastery, I tried to teach the nuns who were coming how to have more confidence, how to be more present in their body with their voice, which is a fundamental spiritual exercise for us, and of course, how to enjoy their voice in singing, but also in talking and speaking.
Yeah, I mean, science is still very much in the early stages of discovering exactly the true powers of sound. And so therefore, the instrument that we have with our voice is quite a remarkable one. And the things that we could do with our voices, I think most people aren't really aware. We just think it's speaking, but there's so much more that goes into the process. So this is why you have indeed, as you say, voice coaches, but also people who help others with making presentations, how to speak in public generally, not because they go up on stage and they're famous, but speaking in public can also encompass meetings, telephone conversations, or podcasts and all these kinds of things. So there's so much there to know. When you said before Buddhify, that kind of made me giggle a bit. So how do you Buddhify Stevie Wonder, Norah Jones? I mean, I love soulful notes of Stevie Wonder and Norah Jones, but how do you Buddhify Norah Jones?
Well, usually Norah Jones, I don't put so many different words, but there's an introduction to the song, right? So if she talks about those sweet words, what did you say? I know what you were singing. And so it is obviously a love song, but I was talking about thinking about the last Dharma talk. So the last talk that a nun gave about a spiritual topic, and those, it's called also in our Buddhist vocabulary, Dharma nectar. It's something very sweet, very precious. So the teachings, the spiritual teachings are like nectar. And so those sweet words can be also linked to the Dharma nectar that we just listened to, for example. So you have the same song, but you give it a completely different frame, and you try to link it with people's experience that they've just had in the monastery and that I've been part of. Or, for example, usually people laugh a lot when we do that. It's, you make me feel like a natural woman, right? Aretha Franklin. Which is, of course, not very Buddhist to sing in that way, because it's like, yeah, it refers to your gender and also your sex, whatever. And so it's really easy to Buddhify, because it's like, cool. Instead of saying you make me feel like a natural woman, you say you make me feel like a natural Buddha. And then people always have to giggle, because that, of course, changes the whole sense of the song. And it's actually beautiful how one time a friend who is also a practitioner, but in a Hinduist tradition, she said, well, I think her spiritual teacher told her, you can sing love songs, you can use the love songs by just dedicating them to God. And she practices with the concept of God. So she says that every love song that she thinks of is a love song to God. And it's the same in a, you can also Buddhify that concept and say, hey, instead of saying, baby, I love you, you can say, Buddha, I love you, Sangha, which is the spiritual community, Sangha, I love you. And I also put a different text to blame it on the boogie. Of course, it was blame it on the Buddha. Don't blame it on the sunshine. Don't blame it on the moonlight. Just blame it on the good times and blame it on the Buddha. And so, yeah, that's kind of maybe also adapting the things that we know and putting them in a different context, which is an expression of what we call the living Dharma. It means that we adapt the teachings that we have, the teachings that are 2,500 years old, to our reality, which I love about Buddhism, but especially about this tradition, because it's not something that is getting older and older and is moving more and more far and far away from our reality nowadays as modern, so-called modern people. But to see what is most important about these teachings for modern people, for Western people in this case. What can we adapt? How can we adapt it? How can we make it come alive so that we can practice it and that we can connect with it? And that's really something that you need to be skillful for. We call it skillfulness. Skillful means, so you need to be intelligent. And it's a challenge, and at the same time, it makes it so vibrant and so alive, at least for me, and I think for many other people too.
Yeah, I can imagine. And yeah, it's fantastic. I have to say, I love any opportunity to talk about the late, great Aretha Franklin. Shout out to her, obviously. yeah, phenomenal character and artist. But singing in general, I have, when I used to be very much involved in the Armenian community in London, one of the biggest pleasures I had was to sit down with friends around a campfire and sing. Sometimes there was an instrument, sometimes there wasn't. It was the communal link through our harmonizations, and sometimes even a lack of harmonizations. But anyway, the connections that you can get through singing with just pure emotion, emotional expression. There were so many times when we would sing or recite poetry and then people would break down into tears. There's no substitute for that kind of emotional outpouring, I think.
Yeah, and it's really impressive how you can touch people by singing for them, also singing with them. And this is what I do when we give a concert at the monastery. We go to we're in the dining hall, which is not very romantic, but which has great acoustic. And so we sing those songs, and then the people get involved by singing the chorus, and sometimes they're singing different voices. And usually afterwards, people come up to me and say, hey, it was so beautiful. I felt so deeply touched. And I will take that home with me, this feeling and this memory. And it's something special, because not every day someone does a concert in the dining hall, right? Which is fine. And so these occasions are precious, and people really appreciate them. And I'm also very happy that I can bring that to this place and to the people. And this is something that nourishes me a lot too, right?
I completely understand that. Yeah, totally. Which kind of brings in a different topic as well, because through singing, through coming together in this spiritual way, it's a means of also dealing with some of the issues concurrent in the world, in the background or the foreground, depending on your perspective and place. How do you deal with it at Plum Village? Because I feel this seems to me to be a place where you can go and try to use it as a place to save the soul, to save your spiritual strength, or to bring your strengths together so that you can face the problems that exist outside. But I'm sure it's also not a place where you can do that simply by saying, leave them outside, because our pains are also a part of us. How do you deal with that then in Plum Village? How do you come to deal with those things there?
Well said, Zach. Well, we have practices that are, let's say, always the same, but the what we talk about and how we deal with our problems is different, but it's helped by these practices, which is like cultivating mindfulness in everything you do. So taking what is there, what is alive in you, and just looking at it mindfully. And mindfully means also with the loving attitude, with an accepting attitude, and sometimes not even trying to change it, but just recognizing what is there. And this you can do by walking with it in walking meditation, by sitting with it in sitting meditation, and also guided sitting meditation. And of course, I think one of the most important practices that we have in Plum Village, referring to the topic that you just brought in, is the Dharma sharing. So the loving speech and deep listening, it's called. And so we come together twice a week in a circle, and then we share our thoughts, but mainly our emotions and what is moving us at the moment. And the rest, it's like counseling. There is this I don't know if you know counseling. It's a very ancient form of sitting around the fire or sitting in a circle just listening to each other. So it is a kind of counseling that we do, and the rest of the people, they just listen, and you have space for things just to be said and to be heard, which is very important for us humans. And then, of course, sometimes you also ask questions and you get answers, helpful answers. And you can have a consultation with a sister or a brother, which is also a very important thing in Plum Village, because it offers you the opportunity to have a heart-to-heart talk with someone who's spiritually more experienced or who is leading a different life than you, but can still give you good advice on how to deal with your emotions. And this is not only something that is happening or that happens within us, but it's also something that happens in a community, which is almost, if you like, something political, because people coming together, cultivating loving kindness, supporting each other, building resilience is something that we need more than ever in this society, in our world. I mean, we've always needed it, but now we're getting tenser. Globalization makes us feel like everything is happening at once, or we know about many things happening. So we need these resilient communities. And in our tradition, I think it comes from, it's a term that Martin Luther King used. He's always said, beloved, my beloved community. And so we have, I think it's a new concept to support the beloved communities. And so those are communities that come together in a certain spirit, of understanding, of loving kindness, and of acceptance in the practice, mindfulness, and that try to support each other. And we try to build these communities. And Plum Village tries to be this kind of community where people can come, but also, of course, support the community there, right? And then they can take it to their lives. And there we recommend people to go to a sangha, to a meditation group, to have that kind of energy there, and the practice, of course, people who support you in the practice and who you can support also, because it's so hard to be mindful when everyone around you is like, running around screaming and looking at the news the whole time or distracting themselves. So it is a kind of counter movement. It's running or swimming against the stream, and your group helps you to do that.
And also fantastic, again, reference to civil rights activist Martin Luther King. Shout out to his memory. So you talk about community. Now, you mentioned a topic there, which I would love to come back and dedicate an entire podcast to, which is resilient communities, because that's something that speaks also of climate action. And making communities more resilient and able to adapt to the changes that are coming. But that's not for us to talk about today. So I'd love to discuss that another time, whenever you have the time. But you mentioned community there. And that also brings us to this other point, which you mentioned earlier, the ZASP course. And I'm going to have to say it, because I told you before, I love the name. Run by Sister True Dedication. Fantastic. I don't know if she'll ever hear, but I love your name, Sister. Brilliant to hear. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's an abbreviation of Zen and the Art of Saving the Planet, ZASP, okay? And so this is a book that was recently published. I mean, maybe recently. It's been 2-3 years since it's been published. And Sister True Dedication, she put it together. She's a former journalist, or she's still in a way a journalist, but a Buddhist nun. Yeah, she put together Thais Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings on mindfulness, but also referring to the earth and us belonging to the earth, being part of the earth and climate action in a way. So they made an online course, which seems to be really great. Many of my Earthholder friends have done it or are doing it right now. And I will do it next year. So the next one will be only next year in autumn, I think. And so this is a course where you read the book, but you also have video material on how to deal with crisis, how to deal with the climate issues, also, of course, more emotionally and psychologically, but also how to prepare the inner ground for taking action. So from which place you act, which is extremely important. The action might not be so different, but the energy in the action and the intention, we talk about a lot about intention and volition. This has to be the right one, or a pure one, as pure as it can be, let's say, you know. So if you act with rage and hate and unrest, then the fruit of your action, usually in Buddhist terms, will not be very good. The energy behind it is not good. But if you act from a place of love and courage and wisdom, it's completely different. And so this course is meant to support you in that and also build community, because, of course, like Sister True Dedication, she told me that the actual course, they have 1,200 people taking the course all over the world. So that's powerful. And you have sharing groups that you can also continue. Some people, they continue their sharing groups after the course and they meet online. They're in different parts of the world and they have exchange about ideas and experiences. So it is also part of that big, big task of building a beloved, resilient community in these troubled times.
But yeah, I mean, building communities is really a tough undertaking. Some places have been doing it for hundreds of years and they still haven't managed to achieve this. And you know, I'm sure that there aren't necessarily these hidden secrets to doing so, but what, in your opinion, is not perhaps the most, but one of the key characteristics for building communities?
Well, it is good to have a group of people that is already seasoned and determined, right? So on your own, it's really difficult. But if you have some people who are on a path together, who have similar values, and I have to say, a spiritual practice really helps. And by spiritual practice, I don't mean like going to church together necessarily. That can be a spiritual practice, but it doesn't have to be. It means that we have things that are beyond, or let's say invisible, and everything I say is a concept and doesn't describe what I mean, but I hope I can get it, that the meaning comes through, that it's not only the material things that we see, but also the universal perspective. So to have that kind of focusing in and looking at the very concrete circumstances that are there and what you need to build a community, I mean, materially, but also emotionally and, you know, and all, but then zooming out and seeing the whole perspective, like, looking at the world from the moon and then at our solar system, whatever, zooming out, and then seeing the whole as much as we are able to. This is very, very good. And then building community, you have to communicate. You have to have rituals and commitments on how to communicate and on communicating itself, which means that, for example, you sit down, the nuns or the monastics in Plum Village, they sit down twice a week to discuss practical things, but also to discuss How are they feeling about each other? They do beginning anew, which is a beautiful practice, and dealing with conflicts, and not even conflicts. It's better to talk about positive things while they are there to nourish each other, so that when there is a conflict, it's not that harsh, you know. And so communication is so crucial. Is so crucial.
Yeah, I think communication is also one of those oftentimes undervalued necessities in any kind of relationship and in any kind of group of individuals as well. I find that with my basketball team as well. Communication is such a key factor of any success that a team wants to have. The only way you can make your intentions clear to the people who work alongside you are to communicate with them. And however, whatever nature that communication may take, as long as the people involved understand it collectively, then that's all that matters. Lilek, thank you very much. It's always thrilling to have these opportunities to listen to your experiences of your trips to Plum Village, but at the same time, your thoughts, and of course, your insight, your wisdom, and suggestions.
I'm bowing out. Thank you, Zach, for this opportunity.
Talk again soon. Take care, Lily.
Bye.
Two. And Mike.